Are you good, Elizabeth? Yeah. Okay, sorry. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the Quill and Query podcast. My name, as always, is Brandon Hall, and I'm joined today not only by my wonderful co-host, Ash, but by a very special guest as well. So, Elizabeth, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Spartanus. I'm a fantasy romanticy author, and I wrote my debut novel, To the Gallows, that released last August, my birthday.
Oh, nice. So very cool. I did not know that little fun fact, so... Yeah. Nice birthday present for yourself, huh?
It's a great birthday present to myself.
All right. Well, we have some fun questions to get into today, Elizabeth. But before we do that, we like to dive into a little bit of a reading update for our audience. Let them know what books we're currently diving into, if anything. Sometimes it's a nothing update. But I'll let you start since you're our guest. Are there any books that you're currently reading that you would like to rant or rave about for the next few minutes?
Sure. Yeah, I'm currently reading two different books. We have my nonfiction and my fiction book. My fiction book is, I actually was like, oh, we're going to talk about books. Let me just grab it. It's Fear of the Flames by Olivia Rose Darling. It's pretty good. Halfway through it, I'm enjoying it. A classic little romance-y. And it's just a fun little read to have. And then for when I'm feeling a little angsty, I'm reading Uncultured. It actually is like very good for being a nonfiction book. She, Daniela Young, she was a member of the Children of God cult in Brazil. And so she talks about her experience being in that cult, escaping it, and then joining the United States military. And she goes into like, what makes a cult? How do these things work? What's it like to get out? And it's just been a very fascinating read with a lot of like good insight just to like have, and a lot of like makes you think, like scratch your head, like, you know, I've never thought of XYZ this way, which has been really fun to think about, especially with State of the World.
That's awesome. I'll have to put it on my TBR. Yeah. That sounds really good. You gave a good sales pitch for that one.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I love to break up fiction reads with some nonfiction now and then. So that'll be a good one to add to my list. What about you, Ash? Are you currently reading anything?
I am. I am reading an advanced copy of The Raven Scholar by Antonia Hodgson, I think is her last name. It is fantastic so far. I'm devouring it. I love like a 30-plus-year-old main female character, especially one of person of color. The aesthetic of it is essentially, I'm only like a quarter of the way in, so I can't give a really good synopsis, but it's essentially like an East Asian inspired arcane style fantasy where there's like a big trial and the main character has to discover who's killed one of the trial folks, but she's also connected to everything. It's really good. It's really well written. It's funny. And it's really refreshing. I haven't read a novel like that in a while. So, yeah, I'm stoked to give my full review when I'm finished.
Very cool.
You have the, like, arcane style.
Yeah. I was like, what is the best way to describe this? Because there's, like, technology involved, but it's not, like, electricity. It's, like, very gear-focused, but it's not steampunk. Like, kind of, it's really
it's
unique.
Like that weird mix of magic-y steampunk going on.
Exactly. But it's, like, less steamy. It's really hard to narrow down and... I think maybe that would be my one biggest feedback so far. Is like, it's kind of hard, the aesthetic. It's like a lot of temples and stuff. But anyway, yes, very fun. I'm enjoying it. What about you, Brandon? Were you reading? I saw you pick up a new book.
Yeah, I picked up, I believe it's an indie book. It's called 11th Cycle. So if for anyone in the chat, I know we have a few of them. If you're a fan of like the Dark Souls games, it's very heavily inspired by that. Pretty big book, so it'll probably be my reading update for the next few episodes because I think it's about 900 pages. It's gonna be a long one, but I'm enjoying it so far. There are some like translation issues because I think it was originally written in German, but nothing that I haven't been able to get past so far. So I've heard very mixed reviews about this one so far, so I wanted to dive into it myself and see, especially as a big fan of the games that inspired it. So
yeah,
so far it's off to a good start. Yeah.
Nice.
All right. Well, we don't really have any podcast updates other than the two things I'm going to reiterate until probably the end of February. our guest form is live, so anyone who wants to be a guest on Cool and Query, much like Elizabeth here, all you have to do is go to our link tree and fill out that guest form. We'd be happy to have you on. And then, of course, the Blades for Hire release date has been announced. If you don't know what that is, it is a dark fantasy mercenary anthology that Ash and I and several other independent authors have worked on. All the proceeds will be going to the charity Book Trust, and that is releasing February 25th, 2025, so less than a month from now. Maybe I shouldn't look at that release date too much because I'm going to stress myself out.
Thank you, Marge.
All right. Well, so another staple, Elizabeth, of Quill and Query that we like to go into before we dive into like the meat of the interview and the icebreaker topics and all of those things is we like to give a little bit of a work in progress check-in. So Ash and I both are currently writing our debuts. And so we like to update our audience on how that's going occasionally. So if you want to chime in and update people on something that you're currently writing, I saw you have a very cool in progress projects on your website. I don't know if that's currently up to date, but it looks very cool. I like how you have it laid out. So feel free to join us in this segment as well. But yeah, so I'll just open the floor to you since I just dumped it all on you like that. Do you have any writing updates that you would like to share with any of your audience who might be tuning in?
Yeah, so I am working on my next book. It's the first in a high fantasy trilogy. The first book is called Fall of the Dragon King. I've been kind of pitching it as Phantom of the Opera meets Anastasia in high fantasy with Madison Dragons. And currently, first draft is done, developmental edits are done, and I'm going through and implementing them, and I'm hoping to have it done and published within the next year, hopefully. My insane goal is to have the draft done by the end of April or mid-May. We'll see if that actually happens.
That's awesome. That's so exciting. That's a good goal.
Yeah. I've been working on this one. This is the one I've been working on. For those who don't know, me and Ash know each other from, we are in a writing group together called Second Cup Writers Cafe, but it's the one I've been working on in there for like the past year and a half.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's so you're exciting. Probably really eager to get this one out to people's hands, huh?
Yeah. Super excited.
How about you, Ash? Any writing progress these past few weeks?
I think my writing updates going forward are going to be primarily focused on drafting. So I've been really heavily drafting the last week, which has been nice. I don't know if you guys watch Severance, the show, at all. No?
I haven't, but everyone's recommended it to me, so I know I need to get to it.
Never mind, I won't use the metaphor, but there's like scary numbers that they have to try and like, it's a stupid job that they have to do, but anytime I like start to work on the draft, it's like I get scary numbers. I'm like, oh my God, this is so nerve-wracking. Only because it's just revealing to me how little I know of my own story. I know the big hits.
Not a mood.
Yeah, it's just like, oh crap, okay, I need to do work. So I did a lot this last weekend, which felt good to get the ball rolling to face those fears. So in terms of paragraph writing, nada. In terms of writing for the book, quite a lot. So yeah, what about you, Brandon?
I've taken a break from A Knight of Knives again for a little bit because I wanted to go back and finish some short stories that I kind of laid the groundwork for a while ago. Not anything new with Blades for Hire, that one's already done, but I have a bunch of short stories that I've been wanting to write for a long time and I just haven't gotten to them yet, and I thought it would be a nice kind of palate cleanser before I dive back into my debut novel draft. But yeah, that's mostly where my writing efforts have gone over the past few weeks. Just short stories, a little bit of flash fiction as well. So like really short stories.
How many words is your flash fiction? Like, is there a, I've never done one of those. So what's the word?
Yeah. So the one that I just sort of wrapped up, I still want to go back and make some edits, but it's around 1500 words, so it's pretty short. And then I have another one that's like 3000 around there, so
couldn't be me. I'm too long-winded, but that's awesome.
this is a good practice for like not being long-winded. So. Yeah,
for sure. No, I admire that, though. I'm like, oh, let me wax poetic for 17 chapters about this one thing. Nope, can't do that.
Yeah.
Not allowed.
Being concise is like the hardest part.
It's so hard. I'm not very good at it.
All right. Well, that's our work in progress check-in. So we're going to get into our icebreaker topics, Elizabeth. These are just for us to kind of unwind and have a little bit of a fun chat before we dive into the actual interview questions. So I tried to pick some fun ones here. Hopefully you guys don't find them too boring. But the first one I picked, this was on my mind recently because I've been rewatching some of my favorite films. I wanted to know what your go-to comfort movies are. So, I don't know if you guys are like me. I'm very picky about like what movies I'll rewatch. It's like my highest praise for a movie is if I'll go back and I'll rewatch it. So, do you guys have any movies that are like that, or maybe movies from your childhood that you just go back when you want something comforting to just to unwind and watch, but not necessarily dive into like a new story? What kind of movies fill those roles for you?
So for me, I would definitely say Disney's Tangled is a big one. Anything from Studio Ghibli, especially Kiki's Delivery Service or Howl's Moving Castle, those are just movies I can go back and watch again and again and again, just because they just feel so nice and refill my creative well. I feel like every time I watch them, especially the Ghibli movies, mm-hmm. I learned something new from them by like looking into the nuance. And also, I'm a huge animation nerd. I love like looking at animation, seeing how they do things, like frame by frame. And there's always something new to like find. And you go, wow, that was there for a reason. That tiny, obscure little detail that they thought no one would notice, I noticed it. And they also just generally just make me feel good.
Love that.
Yeah, I love movies that you can go back and rewatch and still find something new every time. Those are the best. What about you, Ash? Are any comfort films?
Yeah, actually, it's funny you say the Ghibli stuff, because Spirited Away is like one that I can watch and then restart immediately, like, and just do it over. In fact, when I'm sick, I tend to do that. So that's my number one all-time fave. My second is the 2005 Pride and Prejudice. I can also like rewatch that on repeat.
Oh yeah.
And then definitely like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, though Two Towers is my favorite extended edition, of course.
Of course.
But comfort, watch anytime I'm feeling like low or sad, I'm like Lord of the Rings. So yeah, those are my three.
Yeah,
Lord
of the Rings. Lord of the Rings is also one of mine, as long as it's nice. The extended editions.
Right, exactly.
I find that I'm pretty alone in this camp, but I did find one of our fellow authors who agrees with me. But Fellowship is my favorite of the three.
Okay. I get that.
I know most people say Return of the King. I have not heard many really? People say Two Towers, though.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like, so that's, I think, the best one out of all of them. But that's just me.
Yeah, well, it's always interesting just because I feel like everyone always defaults to Return of the King, and they're all great. Don't get me wrong. They're all fantastic movies, but Fellowship is my favorite. And but yeah, they're all a great time. I can put any one of those on when I need something comforting to watch, and they're all going to serve that purpose. Other movies that do that for me, Harry Potter, I grew up with those. All of those will pretty much, they'll fill that same role. Outside of those, I'm struggling to think of additional ones at the moment, but I have a catalog of movies that I'll go back and rewatch just if I think they're that good, but they're not necessarily all comfort films, if that makes sense. Some are just, yes. I think they're really good, but they're not necessarily a comforting watch. I think that the Alien movies probably fit nicely in that category. Like, that's not really a comfort film, but they're still fun rewatches.
Fills your creative well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Especially when I'm trying to get back into like a sci-fi world, those are great. Mm.
I was gonna say, I have a different. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
Go ahead.
There you go.
I was gonna say, I feel like that brings up the interesting topic of like active versus passive rest. Or I guess in this case, active versus passive comfort, and trying to like refill that well, which is, I think, is a really neat concept I've seen a little bit.
Yeah, I like that, because I also have a different category of like films that I love to rewatch or like franchises that I really like to rewatch, but they mm-hmm. don't feel that like I just need like a hug or like,
yeah.
you know, walk down memory lane. Like, not like the Harry Potter films as they get older and older aren't like devastating mm-hmm. and sad, but yeah, there's like a nostalgia with some and just a fun like the Underworld series is one of those rewatches mm-hmm. for me that I love and I absolutely adore, but they're not, I'm not putting that on when I'm feeling low.
Yeah.
So
it's like, yeah, that's being the right headspace.
Exactly. I'm like yeah. a little angsty, a little gothic. It's got to be cold outside. But yeah, yes. no, I totally, that's a good distinction.
Well, moving away from movies and into music a little bit. Mm-hmm. I know not every writer does this, but I listen to music when I write, usually some type of ambient instrumental music. Ash, I think you and I have talked about this before, so I mostly wanted to get your thoughts, Elizabeth. Like, what is your go-to writing playlist, or are you someone who needs absolute silence when you're writing?
I cannot have silence at all. I have to have music. I have many, many playlists I use for writing. Music is probably one of my biggest inspirations with my writing, especially like lyricality, how words flow together in certain songs. I actually feel like I'm one of the insane people that listens to music with lyrics while I write. But what I'll do is I'll have a song and it like switches the itch and it gets me into the writing mood. And then I put mm-hmm. it on repeat and I listen to it on repeat until the words no longer make sense. So definitely write with music. And I get a lot of my best ideas when I'm listening to music, listening to new songs, or listening to old ones again on repeat because the ADHD brain worm just goes for her.
Yeah.
Do you have any artists that for you are like your go-to? I think you're like, you're a Taylor Swift fan, right? Is that like
one? I am a Swiftie. This is my new cardigan. She just dropped it. I just got it today. She's super crispy.
Love it.
But Taylor Swift is definitely one of my big ones. I would also say Noah Kahan is another big one that I listen to a lot. And then my other inspiration would probably be musicals. This book, Fall of the Dragon King, was actually inspired by Goosebumps, the musical, Phantom of the Auditorium. I don't know if you've like listened to that or not.
No.
But it's super good. But that song actually inspired me to write this book and got me thinking, oh, like Phantom of the Opera, what if the Phantom wasn't really bad? Like, what if Raoul is actually the bad guy, not like the guy who comes in to save Christine? Like kind of got me thinking about these different tropes and how to like kind of twist them and get a different narrative. But yeah, musicals are probably another, I would say it's Taylor Swift and musicals. And then Noah Kahan is like right there, just like, hey, we're having a good time. It's fall outside and we're really sad.
Love it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always find it interesting when people can write with lyrics, because that to me, that speaks to like a really strong ability to focus and not be distracted by the words that you're listening to while you're trying to also type words. So definitely admire people who can do that. I most certainly can't. I've tried, but
yeah, I don't mind. I kind of like laser focus in after a while, but I mm-hmm. also have like multiple playlists for whatever I'm writing. Usually like a lot of like, I can't understand what they're saying, 'cause it's like pagan-y folk music or something like that, with like a lot of drums, like
Nordic stuff. Yeah.
I could probably work with that as opposed to like English lyrics.
Right. Yeah. and if they're English lyrics, they're usually like whispery or vague enough that you can't mm-hmm. quite hear. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's got to be like old sounding or like kind of witchy sounding, because I only operate writing wise in the realm of fantasy. So it's going to kind of have that dark, like, other language, otherworldly vibe. But yeah, I also get the can't have lyrics, because then you're just like starting to write the lyrics in your book and then you're like, wait, no, that's not right.
All right, well, moving into our last icebreaker topic, Elizabeth, this is kind of a staple question that I've begun to ask all of our interview guests. So I want to hear your answer for this one. So the question is, what is the best writing advice you've ever received? And then what is the worst writing advice you've ever received? And how have both affected your writing?
I think that both This advice is a dual-edged sword. The best and the worst writing advice I've ever received is writing in Comic Sans. I draft exclusively in Comic Sans now, and I hate myself for it because Comic Sans actually helps you draft faster because it's a very accessible font. It was developed to help people with dyslexia. Every letter is different. And it's easy to read, it's easy on the eyes. And my other like subconscious little thought is that it's so silly that I can't go back and like read what I've written and go back and edit my
How
sentences like
funny.
a gajillion little times. The reason it's the worst writing advice I've ever gotten is because I put everything into Comic Sans now, and then I said to my poor critique partner Courtney in Comic Sans, and she's like, "Why do you do this to me?" I'm like, "You just have to accept it."
Have you considered like saving it in a different font for her? Like when you download it, you're just like, "No, you
I
have to
have.
go through this, what I do."
I have the thought, and then it like flies the coop because I'm just like,
Sure. Just
here you
take it.
go, have it, just take it. She's gotten used to it, and I've converted actually a lot of people to drafting in Comic Sans because when I first started writing, Catherine Sweet is the one who actually gave me this advice. She's a good friend of mine. She was like, "You had negative 600 words in your writing sprint. What are you doing?" I'm like, "I can't help it. I keep going back and like deleting things. Like I just like can't move forward. I was getting so caught up on the sentence structure when I'm like just supposed to be in the drafting mode." She's like, "Here's what you do. You're gonna throw it into Comic Sans and you're gonna put on the timer, you're gonna do your sprint again, and you're gonna go." And lo and behold, I like doubled my word count. Rather than writing like 600 words in a 20-minute sprint, I wrote 1200,
Oh, that's
and
amazing.
consistently it is like doubled my drafting process, like doubled the speed of it, which I'm like, this is the best because it works well, but it's the worst because now I'm just like Comic Sans everywhere. It's really the worst for other people who have to deal with me,
Yeah.
not really myself, but
I vaguely remember you making like a story or a post about this as well. And I
yeah.
remember like it making me giggle really hard because I was like, that's so funny to be like having a very intense or like very sexy scene and you're just writing it in
Yes,
Comic
you're
Sans.
writing it in Comic Sans. I'm
It's
like
almost like,
literally writing this like heart-wrenching scene. And then I send it to my critique partner and she's like, "It's in Comic Sans."
Oh, that's so funny. Oh my gosh. That's pretty good though. I like that. It's like do whatever works for you,
Do
but it's
whatever
always
works.
nice being told like crazy out of this world advice and then it actually
Yes.
working. And you know,
Yeah.
yeah.
Like my other advice that I saw, not really for writing, but for like ADHD helping focus, is I have a toaster lamp. And so whenever I sit down to write, I clock in.
Cute.
Oh, that's
And
cool.
so if the lamp is on, if the toast is toasting, I can't do anything but write. And so if I start getting distracted or if my sprint is up, I clock out. And I've kind of Pavlov'd myself into when I want to write, I can put this on and then go. But the hard part is when I want to write, but it's dead or I don't
Oh
have
no.
it. And I'm like, So that's another fun little thing I have. I have a bunch of little gadgets to help me focus. That's probably why I can write when I'm listening to these lyrics.
Yeah. That's awesome. I've seen like other little things that people do. There's a guy that sells candles that has like a 12-hour burn time and like marks off certain like every quarter of an inch or something is like every 15 minutes. And I love
Oh, I
candles. I'm like a
love
huge
that. I
candle
love
fan.
candles.
Yeah, me too. I'm a huge taper girl. I've got tapers all over the house.
Ooh,
But
yes.
I was like, that's such a great like turn off all the phones and the distractions and then like the
You
candle and
just
then
have the
give yourself a burn
candle.
time. Yeah. Like,
Ah,
the
well,
old folks
luck
back in the
that.
day had really good
They
ideas, but
might
no.
have had a thought there.
They might
They
have, yeah.
might have
They might
had a
have popped off with that one for sure.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, just a little bit.
I've got to say, I've never heard that Comic Sans advice, but that I love how like unique and outlandish it sounds because I'm sure it actually works clearly in your case. It's just really funny to me because in the I work as a web designer by day, so if I used Comic Sans, I would probably get fired. So
you'd be excommunicated. Yeah. They'd say we're revoking any privileges you had.
Good yeah. Time. Yeah, it's funny. It has such a crazy like reputation in the design world, but for apparently it's good for something. So that's always it's good to hear. All right. Well, I think we can dive right into our interview questions. So I'm going to start us off with the first one. You talked a little bit about To the Gallows, which I believe you said was your debut novel. So just give us a little bit of a overview of To the Gallows and then any experience you had writing prior to that.
Yeah, so To the Gallows is my debut novel. It is a cozy cottagecore romance about a charming rogue meant to die, the enigmatic cleric who spares him, and their marriage of convenience that saves them both. It's like Tangled meets The Princess Bride and My Lady Jane, and is just a super fun little read. I'm biased, clearly, on that. But yes, it's a little bit about the book. My experience writing prior to that is I actually got my start with creative writing in role play online, literary role play with like original characters, like collaborative storytelling. Dungeons and Dragons, I also did that, TTRPGs. And I also used to write for a newspaper, an online magazine, a couple of different publications that way. But yeah, so that's kind of a little bit of my experience and a little bit about my book.
Very cool. I think that was the quickest answer we've gotten to that question. Sorry, Ash, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, I was going to say, that's so funny you say about like the role-playing stuff and D&D, because I've just met so many people who also, you know, dip their toes or like really dove in to writing via that. And as someone who didn't get into D&D until later in my life, I was always like aware of it and, you know, knew a bit about the lore and people who played it. It wasn't until I actually played it for the first time years ago that I was like, oh, this is like such a great way to exercise your creativity without being so rigid and structured. So it's so cool. And now I have like a handful of people in my life that I know who like took that and then started to write, you know, fiction and fantasy because of it. So it's very neat.
Yeah. My role play started initially with doing online where you would have your original character and you'd find someone else's original character and you'd be on Tumblr and you'd like,
I was gonna say, is this on Tumblr?
Tumblr. You'd like write your little post and then they'd respond. And then I think one of my formative experiences is what you could do is have people could ask your character questions or like give prompts and you could write about them and explore them, which is really fun writing exercise because you could put characters in really weird situations. And then the person who asked the question could maybe respond to it. And I had one friend that I was writing with where the prompt was like a 7 minutes in heaven situation between our two characters. And so like I wrote a response. It was like really long. And then we were doing like novella length, like super, super long, like 2,000 to 3,000 word replies to each other back and forth. And people in the fandom in the area started reading it like we were writing a fanfic. And so it gained like a little bit of like notoriety in our small little fandom on Tumblr. And I was like, wait, people like what I write? What? It was like one of those moments where I was like, I've always said been like, I want to write a book, but that was probably one of my first formative thoughts of like, wow, people actually like what I write and want to read it. Maybe I could do something with this. I like worked in the newspaper, radio and stuff like that when I was in high school, doing opinion pieces, opinion articles on things going on in my hometown or at the state level. Or at my college when I first started in college. But that was one of the first times I was like, someone wants to read my creative writing, not just like my thoughts on the news. And it was just like a very fun little thing.
It's fantastic. I love that.
I think we touched a little bit on your inspiration, so I'm going to skip that part of this question. But when you were writing To the Gallows, did you pull from any authors that you read growing up? And I know when you look it up on like Amazon or your website, it says a cozy romantasy. So talk to us a little bit about like what does a cozy romantasy mean for you or for someone who might not be familiar with books in that genre?
Yeah. So I actually, when writing To the Gallows, I have a confession to make. I have never read another, when I was writing it, I had never read a cozy fantasy novel before. I had never read Legends and Lattes, Can't Spell Treason Without Tea, The Honey Witch, Spell Shop. Emily Wilde. Like, when I wrote this, I hadn't read any of them, but I knew that the story I was telling was going to be this cozy read filled with so much food. It's mouth-watering. I've been told that I make people exceedingly hungry when they read my work. But that kind of just felt like coming home and sitting down on a couch with and cuddling up with a blanket and opening the book. Like, you get that comforting feeling of like, I just want to like be snug as a bug in a rug and read this book. And it feels like getting, I've been told it feels like getting a warm hug, or it feels like sitting on the porch with a cup of coffee. And that's just like a very easy, comforting read. So that's kind of, to me, what cozy means. As far as the romantic part, there's a lot of debate on like, is it strictly romance? Is it strictly fantasy? In my book, yeah. This is strictly a romance novel, but it is also a fantasy novel. It's like a 50-50 blend of the two. Some people have said they think that this is not enough romance to be a romantasy, or it has too much romance to be a fantasy. So that's definitely a personal definition people make for themselves. But
yeah,
I would say that's kind of a little bit about what a cozy romantasy is. Did I answer the question?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. No, I fully agree. I think that's a really great description of it. As someone who also reads cozy romantasies or cozy fantasies, mm-hmm. I think a lot of it comes from like the stakes are pretty low. Like the ulterior motive is less like we're trying to save the world and stop the big bad guy, and more just like we want to find out who we are and do it in a less dangerous way, even though the novel may start off like, you know, someone is about to die and all that kind of stuff. It's like
and that's like the fun thing about To the Gallows, is that actually throughout the whole book the stakes are, I've been told, kind of high, and that the book is might be too angsty to be considered cozy. I get a lot of things where I was like, this book is in the middle of a lot of things and it doesn't fit the definition of anything, and I'm like, that sounds like me, sounds like something right. But the stakes in this actually are kind of high, but I think the best description I've ever thought of for this, and this came from a reviewer who like sent their review to me, like with permission, they wanted to like tell me what they thought of the book, and they're like, this felt like I was watching an anime. I was like, you know what, this is a Ghibli movie. What's the core thing about a Ghibli movie is that you're following a protagonist, even if the stakes are high. It's all about that like introspection and that learning, and learning how to be a person that makes the movie cozy and makes it where you can go back and watch it again and again, because you're like learning, I guess, life lessons, but it's more like introspective learning rather than focusing on the plot, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense to me, but I also read it, so I'm not, Brandon, does that make sense?
I'm gonna say, Brandon, does that make sense?
I'd say it makes sense. So I'm glad you actually touched on the stakes too, because I didn't think of this when I asked the question, but what popped in my head when I saw the book on Amazon was the title is To the Gallows, but then it says a cozy romanticy. So I was like, I was very curious at how that works. I was just very curious as to how that plays into how do you write a cozy story titled To the Gallows?
So the spoiler alert, chapter one, the whole premise of the book is that Eldrick Lorecaster is a charming rogue who is about to die. He's like a Robin Hood style thief who is going to be hung for his crimes. He's been caught, and Lorelei Weinmar is the high cleric who is like at the gallows, at the foot of the gallows tomb, his last rite, his last blessing. She does this when he petitions like one of the old dark gods, and then the dark god says, hey, I want you to save him, actually. It's not his time. She doesn't realize this until it's too late and the rope is literally around his neck. And so she says, wait, I'm going to invoke this ancient like ritual like that says that I can marry him and reform him. If I can reform him into society within the next year, then he's saved and he's pardoned of his crimes. But if I fail, then I also meet the noose. So it's like that weird balance of like her working to be a better person, but also him showing her, hey, things are not as they seem. You need to kind of step out of your frame that you have like lived in within your religion, and maybe take a step out and see what else is outside in the world. So that's kind of, I think, how it balances that like this, it has stakes, and it is ultimately about, like, hey, we're trying not to die, but also being cozy, because you get a lot of these home moments where he's making pizza and they're sitting on the couch and they're just talking about, like, oh my god, we actually really know nothing about this bond. Like, what do we do about it? Like, we're trying to figure this thing out, and these just domestic moments. So I think that's the balance.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very Pride and Prejudice, or not Pride and Prejudice, Princess Bride. It's like, stakes are high, like, we're running for our lives, but, you know, it's fun, and it's whimsical, and, like,
and it's
sweet.
Whimsical.
Yeah.
And then we go pick berries on the hillside, and then we cry, because we're kind of sad. And it's great.
Sounds like a normal Saturday for me, to be honest.
Yeah,
but...
right?
All right, Ash, I think I'm going to hand the next question off to you. So,
all right.
The floor is yours.
Okay. So, obviously, you write this book, but tell us more about the process of writing for you. We've discussed the Comic Sans. We've gotten into the broad strokes, but tell us how you write. I mean, what's that look like for you? Is it a daily thing? Do you set time away? We know you have your toaster, but give us more about that.
The actual writing process. So I wish that I could say I'm a person who writes daily. I want to be a person who writes daily, but my inspiration doesn't come in a linear process. So really the inspiration can strike and I can bang out maybe 10,000 words. And then the next 3 days, my brain's like, actually, nope, you don't have a single brain cell. You don't have a single thought. Your brain is
yeah.
no wrinkles. And so it's very non-linear. As far as the actual process goes, I do a mix of, I'm kind of a planter. I plan things out to an extent, but also allow the story to grow organically. And I also write it linearly. So I start at the beginning and I write every chapter until the end. A lot of people will like switch around and go, oh, I'm going to write this chapter in the middle because I'm really like feeling that today. And then I'll go back and write this one. And I find that with myself, if I do that, I don't want to go back and fill in the blanks because I've already rewarded my dopamine brain. And so I write beginning to end. And then after that, I go in, I do my developmental edits. I work as a developmental editor for other authors. And so I actually do my own developmental edits. I kind of disengage from the work, go in with a crap ton of sticky notes. I don't think you can see them, but I have like sticky notes all over my wall. And I go in and developmental edit my own book with sticky notes on the wall. And I stand here listening to ridiculously energetic music while I'm like trying to hype myself up to do these edits. And then I go back and implement them. And usually I write a really clean first draft is what I've been told. Because with To the Gallows, I actually only had, I would say two drafts where it was like my very, very first draft, like, hey, this is the story. And then I went back developmentally edited and added chapters, took out chapters, but never went back and touched the other ones. And I sent it off to my line editor and together we did line edits on my book and then that was done.
That's amazing. That's so impressive too. Like only two bouts of it. Yeah,
I feel like it's not the normal thing, and I don't think it's going to be the normal thing for me for other books. This book was a fluke. I wrote it in under 2 months.
Wow. That
like,
was impressive.
Which is, like, impressive to me. I'm like, I did that.
Yeah.
But I don't think I will be doing that again. I hope everyone saw that.
Yeah, I like the sticky notes approach. I haven't seen anyone else who has a wall of sticky notes for their edits. But it's right there to bother you at all times so that you have
right
to work.
It's right here to bother me at all times. And then I can go, wow, what did I want to do here? So like when I'm like full developmental editing, this wall is full. I'll break it down into a 3-act, 3-scene structure where I'll have whatever scenes I'm going to have in each act. And then I like to do 3 scenes per like, I guess, concept or like idea. So each kind of section within an act, it is broken down even smaller. Like I go by the rules of 3s and I feel like that's really worked pretty well for me so far. I don't know how to explain it any more than that, though. I just know.
I know. I'm trying to picture it in my mind. Make
brain hurt.
Yeah.
Listen, as long as it works for you, I can follow the process, but
yeah.
All right. Well, we touched on your writing process a little bit. So talk to us a little bit about the publishing process. You talked about how you do your edits, developmental edits, and then line edits. So how did you decide, one, what platform to publish on? And then did you set any like specific publishing goals for To the Gallows? And how did you end up hitting those or missing them? And what did that teach you about publishing in general?
So originally when I was going into doing my line edits, we're going to start at that point. I was like, I don't know what I want to release this book. I thought maybe I'd release it in 2025. And then I just felt like the pull, and maybe it's just the impulsivity of it. My brain was like, you can release this on your birthday. And I said, yeah, release this on my birthday. My first novel on my birthday. Like, you're right. That's a great idea. Let's go. And so from there, it kind of became a sprint. May was the month that I did my line edits, my first round of line edits. I started marketing To the Gallows really heavily in June. And then in July, I sent out my art books and I kind of got a lot of people involved. I found a lot of people on Threads, on TikTok, on Instagram who were interested in my book. And I also worked with a book tour company on Instagram to help kind of distribute ARCs that way and get people who would at least like help with my cover reveal, get an early copy of the book and say, hey, I'll review this in exchange for like a free copy if they wanted to. And as far as the platform I published on and like my goals for it, my goal is just, I wanted the book out there. I didn't care. I care if people read it, but like, I didn't care if people read it. Like, I cared that I wrote the book. I was freaking proud of myself for writing the book, especially at a breakneck pace. After being inspired by a random TikTok one day in February and just saying, yep, I guess this is my debut novel. Now we're going to set aside the novel I've been working on for the past 2 years and going for it. So I put it onto Amazon and I knew that I wanted it to be in Kindle Unlimited because I want my book to be as accessible to people as possible. And so that's why I didn't have a cap on how many ARC readers I had and just trying to just get it out there to let people say, hey, I read this random book online and hopefully they enjoyed it.
Do you feel like having like more kind of loose is not the word, but like you weren't like, I need to hit like 1,000 downloads or I need to have these many people reach. Do you feel like that made the process more enjoyable for you?
Absolutely. Not having any expectations going into it made anything that happened so much more exciting.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I have 200 people who signed up to read my book as an ARC. What do you mean? Like having no expectations of like, this is how many ARC readers I want to have. This is how many downloads or sales I want to have on day one. How many pre-orders I want to have. I feel like that really helped me. And also doing the marketing in a short time frame of only 3 months, I feel like really worked for me because then I could just focus on the writing. I was in the writing portion. And then for 3 months, I could just focus on the marketing and finishing my editing touches. And then after the publishing, continue to market because you market forever after you publish.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind, Brandon, since that you brought up like the marketing portion, talk to us about like that. So you have the book, you're ready for it. You're like, oh my gosh, we're going to publish this on my birthday.
Yeah.
What did marketing look like for you? Were we slating posts to go out like a week in advance? Did you have a calendar? Walk us through that.
Yeah, so I had posts scheduled out as far as Instagram would let me in advance, which is a month. So for the 3 months leading up to marketing, basically for like a month, like I had my posts planned out very far in advance. And I worked with some content creators who helped. Basically, they sold like templates for Instagram that you could, like in Canva, that you could kind of edit to make fit your book and put your characters into, and kind of help give me a launching point to be able to like post consistently every day. Because posting consistently every day is freaking hard, especially if you're having to like come up with all of the ideas fresh yourself. So I had some services, some people that I worked with, where they helped me get some content batched and ready to go. And basically for July and August leading up to release day, I made a post at least once, if not twice a day. And they were all scheduled out way in advance. So it's kind of the social media side of things. And then I also, like I mentioned, worked with a book tour company called Hidden Hollow Book Tours. And basically, they have readers who sign up, and by working with Hidden Hollow on their end, they can get a free ARC and like review it, obviously, if they want to. There's no payment involved with the readers exactly. But the payments to the company for like basically helping organize everything. And the readers helped with my cover reveal. They helped type up my book before the release, and then they also like then left their reviews and their honest reviews, and it, I think, really the word of mouth that way helped a lot. Like, I loved how my marketing went for To the Gallows, because I think it started there, and then it just is kind of like snowballed into just being this like book that people have shared with their friends, and I love that.
Yeah, I was going to say your marketing always felt like really consistent and impressive in the amount that you were able to put out. But it's also, I never really thought about going to like a smaller like marketing person and just being like, yeah, do you have like a batch collection of stuff that I can just, yeah, that's so smart. And I, you know, I love Canva, but sometimes I'm like, I don't want to do this by myself.
And I mean, and that's how like you're able to like get people is by posting consistently and keeping that consistent brand voice that you have, and being able to go to someone and say, hey, can you kind of like set me up with this style of post? And like, they make it like, it's not like I got it like made directly for me. These are templates basically that they're uploading for like a membership fee, like a Patreon kind of deal. The one specifically that I was part of was the Word Weavership, ran by Sam's Creative Cure over on Instagram. I really enjoyed like all of her content. She also helps get together like stock images, like royalty-free stock images, book flat lays. So like, if you see any like flat lays of my book on my profile, a lot of those are actually digital flat lays that she has like a blank book, and then you can put your book on top of it. And I like doing editing stuff, so I like did it as best I could to make it look like it really was my book. And then I really took those photos, but I didn't. And I'm the first one to like be transparent. And like, you can't do that consistently unless it's actually your full-time job. And it's not.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not right now, but it will be one day, hopefully.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Put that in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely feeling that with Blades for Hire. Sometimes trying to think of a new post that we can make that we haven't already made. And something that doesn't just feel like we're just trying to put out another post too, right? So like, yeah, social media marketing is not my strong suit. But
I suck at it so bad. It's like my least favorite thing in the world, but it's like so essential to the writing. Yeah, I know Brandon feels the same way. It's like, I want to get people interested, especially as I write this process. And like you and a couple others like Jordan are just so good at posting consistently. And yeah, I just need to find the drive to do that or find ways, which obviously, but it's also hindsight, is just like, or reach out and find like what you found where it's
find
like
a resource. Yeah.
Find a resource that helps you. So we've been trying to figure that out with Quill and Query as well. So
some great advice. The hardest part. It's the hardest part. So, just like also asking for help. Just asking for help from people. Even like without exchange of monies, just being like, hey, if you help me with this marketing thing, I'll help you do whatever you want. I'll shine your shoes. Give me my first born.
Yes.
Don't make me go into Canva blind.
Oh, that's good.
Well, you told us a little bit about how people reacted to like the marketing and how you got a lot of ARC signups, but how did the actual reception of the novel go once it was out in people's hands, once the reviews started coming in and it was available for sale and you got the ARC reactions? What were the reactions like for you?
Overwhelmingly positive. I had a lot of positive feelings, especially because I was publishing on my birthday. So I got a lot of ARC reviews back on publishing day because everyone waited to post their reviews on the day it published. And I kept seeing the reviews come in. I think I got 30 on release day from all of my ARC readers over on Goodreads. And I was just like happy tears, like, oh my God. Like, people are enjoying my book. I overwhelmingly feel like I've had a very positive reception over on Goodreads. It's hanging out at like a, I think now it's like a 4.2 stars, but for a while it's hanging out like 4.7. But I've recently had a huge influx of new readers thanks to a couple of TikToks that have done exceedingly well since the app did the little blip thing. and I've had a lot of new readers. And one of the beautiful things about finding new readers is that you find people who don't actually like your book. And the way I look at it and the way that Catherine Sweet, who I keep mentioning, but she's a dear friend of mine.
No, she's amazing.
She's amazing. She wrote like half of these books right here. I work with her developmental editor and she works as my hype person and helps me with my editing. But one of the ways she put it is like, when you start getting bad reviews, that means you've broken out of your circle. And that's what you want. You want to break out of your circle to try and get into the mainstream, to try and get to those people who may not normally see your content, may not normally see your book. So bad reviews are actually good things. And getting bad, like getting one star reviews, I just got my one star recently. I just like happened to see it when I was like checking my rating and I was like, oh, I got my first one star. Fantastic. It helps reframe it that way. And also to kind of think of reviews as they're people's opinions. I have this like review I saw one time for a surgical place. And this person was like, literally saved my life. 4 stars. You can't please everyone. So kind of thinking of reviews that way as well is like, I have breached containment. I am out of my little circle. And then like, you can't please everyone. I could literally write the best book ever. And someone's still going to be like, I'm going to knock 1 star because the bathroom was dirty.
This has been a frequent or semi-frequent topic of us, like on the podcast. We've talked about it before. And I think we're pretty solidly in the I don't know yet camp of like, do we at some point read the reviews? And that's some authors don't read the reviews at all. And some do. So are you like a consistently catching up on reviews, or is it just like if I end up seeing one while I'm checking, kind of as like you mentioned?
If I'm seeing one while I'm checking kind of deal, reviews definitely aren't a space for authors. Like, we shouldn't be commenting on them, replying to them. Even if we happen to catch one and we're like, oh my gosh, we really misunderstood this. I kind of subscribe to the John Green kind of model of thinking of like, once put the book out into the world, you've lost all privileges to say anything about it to anyone unless they directly ask you. Right. So if I see some, I'm like, okay, cool. But I don't want to take anything to heart. And two, it's actually something I put into my arcs when I distributed them is like, I'm not going to read your reviews. I'm not reading them for constructive feedback. I'm not reading them for ideas. The story is not changing. And I feel like I really kind of try to hold on to that mentality because I wrote the best story I could at the time. And there's no need to go back and beat up younger me for any mistakes she might have made with the plot or with how she said a specific prose or how often her character cries because she did the best she could with what she had. And I think it's important to remember that.
Yeah, I think that is extremely valuable and something that we should all, I think, take to heart because I was going back, it's been months since I've written for my novel, Filthy Hunger, and I went back and reread so I could start plotting again. And I was like itching to go back and edit because I've, even in just the few months that I've been working on the short story, I've grown so much as a writer. I think I've improved. I think my storytelling has gotten better. But you're also like you said, like, I can't go, I mean, with this I can because it's edits or whatever. But
it's edits, it's just like, so hard though.
It is still hard. I was like, you know, I'll go back and edit eventually, but like the urge to go and just like really dive in, I had to be like, no, like different time, different era. We're leaving that here and we're going to move forward with the new skills we have. So a little bit different of an example, but yeah, I like that advice a lot. I think it's really important. There's some people that I feel like often write for clout. And then they go on, see the reviews, and then get really upset with their readers.
Their feelings.
Yeah, and it's like, then don't put anything out. I'm actually going to do that right now with my dad when he eventually listens to this. Yeah, he was like, you talked about me in the first episode. And I'm like, yeah. Like,
yeah,
it's nothing negative in my opinion, but like, this is my podcast, you know?
Yeah.
Love you, Dad, but it's out in the world now, you know? It's just, I'm not going to put anything out there, but yeah. Shout out to my dad. But no, it's, you can't be mad, you know, once you put it out. It's like, unless you make a big mistake, and then you should apologize
unless
for
you,
it.
Like, really mess up, and which you should totally apologize for and take accountability for if someone brings it to your attention. But it's also the, like, trying to find that balance is super hard, and sometimes you have to do some mental gymnastics that are just really weird.
Yeah. No, totally.
But it works, I guess.
For some it works, sure. I think for others, they just, like, you'll never be able to get certain people to move on from that kind of stuff. So.
Yeah.
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 Well, I'm going to kind of combine two of our questions here. So I want to hear about some of the challenges you may have faced when you were writing and publishing to the Yellows, like some of the biggest hurdles you had to overcome. And then what lessons did you learn from To the Gallows that you're going to carry over into this new project that you're working on?
So challenges from when I was writing To the Gallows. One is time. We only have so much time. And trying to... successfully writing a book in under 2 months requires a lot of time. I work full-time as a nurse, and at that time I worked night shift as well. I do labor and delivery, and so it's a very seasonal job that some days in the winter you don't have a lot of patients, because baby season is like June, July until the end of September. That's when everyone's coming in and having their babies. It's the most popular time to have a birthday. So in the winter, when I was writing this, I did have downtime. So I actually got to take my lunch breaks. I actually got to take my state mandated breaks, which I often don't get to take. So I took that time that I was able to have because of how my work is and work on writing my book and carving out the little 15 minutes that I could. And that was a lesson in discipline, figuring out how I can write in the most random of places, and a lesson in resilience of being able to, like, be actively engaged in my work, but also being able to, like, pull back and go and do things in life. But carving out time was definitely one of my hardest challenges, because a 60,000 word novel doesn't write itself. And I think that's definitely something I'll take into my next book. I'm definitely not having as much free time as I did when I wrote this book, because now I'm marketing this book while I work on my next book. And I work day shift now, which is significantly busier than my night shift life was. Definitely the carving out of the time is something I've struggled with and something I'm going to be taking into the next book. Is just saying, even if it's only 15 minutes, that's 15 minutes. You can get a lot done in 15 minutes.
That's a few paragraphs or, you know, a couple pages if you're typing fast enough. So.
If you're going real fast. Yeah. And, like, another thing I guess I struggled with was giving myself reasonable accommodations. And being able to say, like, okay, I need to give myself an accommodation in this way. One of the ways was saying, hey, babe, like, to my husband, like, who hangs out in the same room with me whenever I'm, like, on my computer, whatever, like, my computer's here, his is, like, right there. Like, I need you to evacuate the dance floor, and I need to be by myself. And being able to say that as, like, a reasonable accommodation, because, like, I can't write as effectively when he's here. And being able to be a little bit selfish in that respect, to be like, I love you so much, but I can't be my most effective self, and I only have so much time.
Yeah.
And that's also where, like, the toast comes in, and, like, I have a physical timer, like, you, it's like this, and it kind of, bing, it just finding the reasonable accommodations to be like, I need you to be out. I need to have my headphones on. I need to not think about dinner. I need to be selfish for a minute, because I feel like the act of writing a novel can be very inherently selfish, but what I think it kind of has to be, you have to be able to focus entirely on yourself, entirely on your brain, and entirely on your character, so that you can then be selfless and give it to the world. But I think those are definitely some challenges that were very hard for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a good point, though. I think recognizing the reasonable accommodations is something that I have had to also work on. I know Brandon's tired of me talking about this at this point, but like, I'm kidding. But, you know, like realizing what didn't work, because I was a planter for a really long time. And then I was finding myself just hitting a brick wall and like not being able to write for so long. And then therapist being like, maybe you have to be a planner, and working on the short story ended up being true. You know, like your timer or the candle, or some people need to never be in the house when they write. They have to go write somewhere else or whatever. It's the journey. It's part of the journey. And I think that's a good reminder to most of us that like, there isn't one way to do it. And if you find you're having trouble with something, what can you do to fix it? And then reaching out to your community, being like, I'm stuck. What do you do when you're stuck? Or, you know, what are some tips and tricks? So yeah, it's a good reminder.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think time, is probably what separates the people who really want to write a novel and then the people who actually do, right, is finding that time and finding it consistently. That seems to be a pretty common theme with the authors that I've seen and that we've interviewed is, you know, how many people do you know that say they want to write a book? I feel like that's fairly common, a goal that people have, but what separates the people who are able to do it is the discipline and finding the time and advocating for yourself, like you said. So those were all great points. And I think what you said about how writing is inherently selfish sometimes is also a really important fact to acknowledge, because I feel like we don't touch on that a lot in the writing community, and how sometimes that can affect relationships, and how do you like communicate that to someone, you know, that you are in a close space with and say like, listen, I need the room to myself. Because I'm the same way. I need, like, I gotta be alone when I'm writing. I can't have anyone in my space. So,
Yeah, and as I see in the comments on TikTok, Nicole said to advocate for yourself and to yourself. And I just like really agree with that. It's like, I tell my husband, I'm like, you have to leave the house so I can film TikTok. I'm so sorry. Go to the gym for an hour, or like go to Panera, or go get a coffee. I don't know. I need to be alone for like 30 minutes to film TikToks. Like, it's the being able to not only say to someone else like, hey, I need you to do this so that I can do my things, and being able to say to yourself like, you can ask for things, it's actually okay, and people would actually rather that. And I'm like, really? Sure.
Well, there's all that guilt that comes attached with it too, because I'm the same way in terms of like filming TikToks. I'm like, no one can witness this. If anyone is witnessing this, it's so embarrassing, like whatever. I don't know how people do it in public, like,
right?
I don't either. My husband's like, I'm not judging you, like, you can film with me in the room, I don't care. I'm like, I know you're not, but my monkey brain does not do that. And I have trauma.
Yeah.
So please go get a coffee.
Remove all obstacles, including you. Be gone.
Including yourself. Be gone.
Yeah. Right.
I can't even talk on the phone like when I'm walking through a public place. So it's I would never be able to film on TikTok in public.
Right. I feel that to my core, 100%. Yes.
All right, Ash, I'm going to give you the next question. Go ahead and pick from our remaining questions here.
So we talked a lot about marketing and how complicated it can be and how time consuming. But in order to market, you had to have a book cover in mind, a design in mind. Yes. Walk us through the book cover design process, because this was all self-published. So what did you do with that?
So this is the cover for To the Gallows. I designed her myself. I made my cover myself in Canva because I decided to myself, what do I want to put my money into? And while I know how much a good cover sells, I'm broke. I'm just a normal person with a normal people job. And if I want to pay my editor and I want to try and actually get the book out there, what can I do myself? So I did my own developmental edits and I designed my own cover. I got the idea from your classic, like your Penguin Classics literature books, with like the gold foil and the filigrees and stuff, and designed it myself. And you can see, I think, in this, you can see in the background, there's like some light flower patterns. So when I was designing it, I was looking at other covers. I made a Pinterest board of like different covers of this type and found like what I like from them. I really liked this kind of frame situation. And then I liked on the cover, you can see where the flower or the leaves overlap the words. And so that's kind of how I designed it. Originally, this was actually a placeholder cover, and I was like, I'll figure out the cover
I
later.
remember
I'm
that. I
just gonna
remember,
do this to
yeah.
procrastinate. And then I was like, oh God, no, I love it. Oh no. And then it became the cover. But a lot of people really like the cover. I had some people say, oh no, you shouldn't make your own cover ever. And that doesn't like to the gallows, that's such a random thing, and you're calling it a cozy romantasy. The cover doesn't relay that at all, and neither does the name. You're giving not the best marketing expectations. And I was like, well, we're here.
I like it, so
Yeah, it's like I
bye.
like it, and that's what matters.
Yeah,
But
100%.
yeah, so that's how we got this cover, is that she was an accident, but the accident.
Gonna say, go ahead, Brandon.
I was just gonna say it's a gorgeous cover. And did I notice some sprayed edges on that copy that you were just showing us?
Yes, you did. So I don't have sprayed edges for sale, but these are sprayed edges that a bookstore I worked with, actually, I sold them copies into the gallows, and they sell them. And I went to work with them for a fantasy event. They had six authors lined up, and I had just released to the gallows, and they already had this event planned. And I was like, hey, like I have this book. You're in the area. If you're interested, I can send you a digital copy. And if you want to like purchase copies, like I would love to speak to you. Like I just literally slid into their DMs. And so they read a arc of To the Gallows, and they have actually been number one supporter since. And they were like, we love your book. Do you want to come to our signing? We can't put you on the official list of authors, but you're gonna could you be a bonus author? Like we want you to come to this event. And so I ended up going to the event, and they surprised me with sprayed edges on my
Oh,
book that
that's
I
so
had no
cool.
idea they were doing.
Amazing.
How many authors get surprised with sprayed edges on their own book?
Yeah,
That
that's
is
awesome.
zero
So
clue,
lovely.
and I had to not cry because I was like there to be like talking to people, and like I was like
Right.
pitching my book and like doing that stuff. And I'm like, I can't cry. I'm wearing mascara and I'll ruin my makeup. But like, yeah, there's sprayed edges, and I hope maybe one day I can have sprayed edges on a bunch of copies. But for now,
That's so
she's one
lovely.
of a kind.
No kidding. That's so sweet. And
Yeah,
that
and
shows the importance, kids, of supporting your local small
support your
businesses
local
and
indie
booksellers.
shit.
Yes. Love it.
She fell. Oh my God.
No.
She fell. But no, my local indie bookstores have been so incredibly instrumental, I think, in spreading my book, because through my local bookstores, I have met so many new readers who were like read To the Gallows, and then now I'm friends with them. And not only that, but like they've invited me back to do events. I've done a couple of signings now, and just being able to create that community locally and being able to then give back to my local bookstores. Like my book has been now it been in four brick and mortar bookstores in the New England area, and hopefully there will be more soon. But being able to not only be supported by them, but also support them like by way of having this or going to do, I'm going to do a book club next month, or no, in March. We're not in February yet. So in March, I'm going to do a book club with this indie bookstore, where I go and like talk to their readers and hang out, and we talk about book club things. I don't know. I've never been in a book club.
That's awesome. I love a book
Yeah.
club. I'm in way too many book clubs, unfortunately. My poor little brain can't handle it sometimes. I'm like, I read some of it, but I'm here. That's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well,
Brandon, did you have the next question or do you want pizza?
I was actually going to skip timeline because I think we touched a little bit on what your writing and publishing timeline looked like. So I wanted to ask about writing tools, aside from Comic Sans fonts. What are some of the tools that you found yourself using while you were writing? Maybe if you formatted yourself, what tools did you use for that as well? I know there's a wide variety of tools that people like to write in. Some people are very simple, like me. I stick with my Google Docs and that's it. Other people, they love their Scrivener with all the features. So, where do you kind of fall in
Yeah.
that?
So I kind of fall in the I use a mix. I draft in Living Writer, which is kind of similar to Scrivener, but I could never. I tried the trial of Scrivener. I could not fathom. I could not work wrap my brain around it. I could not work with it. And so I was looking for alternatives. And I came across this app called Living Writer, which is very similar, has a lot of the same features, but it has a more, I guess you could say, modern design. And it is web-based, so you can access it from anywhere in the world on any computer. It doesn't have to be your own. And it syncs and runs, I think, through Google. But I also use, so I draft in that, and then I edit in Google Docs with my line editor added as like a, she can like comment and suggest and correct things that way. That way it's a little bit more collaborative. We can kind of pop through different places in the book. And I like to be able to scroll through it this way because the way that Living Writer works is it's separated by section or chapter, however you want to like designate it as, but it's separated by chapter, so you can't do like a continuous scroll to see like just what you need. Or if you're trying to find something, you have to like click through things rather than I know it's about the middle of the document and scroll. So that's what I use for drafting and editing. And then for my formatting, because I formatted my book myself, I use Atticus, which is a formatter you can use on Windows. I know a lot of people use Vellum. I do not have a Mac. So I used Atticus, which I think was like $100. In the grand scheme of things, relatively affordable for what it does. You can also write directly in Atticus, which I think is really cool. If you're not wanting to like pay for a separate writing program, you can actually write directly into Atticus. And so it will format everything. You can set up exactly how you want it formatted, save that, and then you say, okay, I want to publish this as a PDF. I want to do it as a MOBI. I want to do it as whatever type file you need, and it can do all of it for you, which I really
That's
enjoyed. It
cool.
was very nice and very easy. I've heard a lot of people have problems with it, but I never had an issue. I never had any glitches that happened with it. It was very easy, but I'm also a big fan of simplicity in formatting. I'm not looking for anything big, anything fancy. Like, I just want some regular words on a page. I don't need a whole like landscape picture that goes across two pages. Like, I think those are beautiful, but like that's just not, it's not what I needed for this. So I think those are most of my tools I used outside of like the focus tools we already talked about and Comic Sans.
I was, sorry,
Go
I
ahead.
was just going to interrupt real quick. Apparently, Nicole can hear Nova whining, so I'll make sure I get that out of the recording. Sorry, I hope it's not too loud. She's getting very
Oh, I didn't
impatient
even
with me.
notice.
Oh, you, okay, so you guys can't hear. That's a good thing.
I
But,
can hear it, but it's okay.
Oh.
I'm used to her mirror whining, so it doesn't bother me in the slightest. And I figured it wouldn't show up in the official
Yeah,
recording,
I'll make
so.
sure I hide that in the recording, but
Free
she's
that girl.
unhappy
Free
with me.
her.
Yeah, she's mad because I had to go to the office today, so she
Oh no,
Oh,
she needs
sweet girl.
attention.
Yeah, that's what she needs. But yeah,
That's funny.
no, sorry, Ash, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
No, you're good. You're good. I was gonna say I actually used Living Writer for a very long time, and I liked it for that syncing, like it'll update or whatever. But then twice in a row, I was writing on my iPad on a plane on airplane mode, and then when I went to connect to Wi-Fi, it deleted of like two chapters of my
No.
work and lost it completely, and I had to talk to IT, and they were like, "We can't recover."
Oh
So
my
because it
God.
happened twice, I was like, "I've got to go. I've got to go old school
Oh my
Scrivener."
God.
So I
I think I'd
know
cry if that happened.
I was devastated because it was like one of the best chapters I thought I'd written at the time, and it, whatever. But it's okay. We recover.
We
We
adapt,
do.
overcome, conquer.
That's exactly right. But yeah, I really did like Living Writer for that reason, for the
Yeah.
simplicity, because Scrivener can be a bit of like a, it kind of looks like an old school programming and it's a bit of a beast. But
Yeah,
yeah, I did enjoy Living Writer.
I had a little scare like that with Living Writer, but I ended up being able to go back into my versions history and like getting it that way. And it wasn't like chapters, it was like a paragraph that I wrote like on my phone, I think. But I would cry. I had a similar
That's awful.
experience back when I first started deciding I wanted to write a book back in 2022. back when I started Second Cup. And I was using a program called Plotter, which takes the sticky note thing and basically makes it digital. I wrote a huge outline for a epic fantasy, like multi-book series that I was going to do. I'm still going to do, like, I still have all that. It deleted every single word of it. Every single word. I had like this huge world building, went into like talking about these like elements that are in the world that are important to the book, and like going into in general, like huge plotty outlining things. It deleted every single thing. I think I cried when that happened, and I called IT, I emailed them, and they were like, we can't get it back. I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. And I was like, I know it's not your fault, but I'm so angry. And I had bought, because I really enjoyed the program, because the sticky note method.
Yeah.
I had really enjoyed it, and I had bought a lifetime like membership. It was like $100. And I was like, I can't use this. I can't use this. So like, I completely did. I think if I had that experience again, I would just say, well, I'm not meant to be an author.
Yeah. And you know, technology is infallible, or is fallible. It's so fallible. It's like,
unfortunately,
you know, and that's, I learned that lesson of like, anytime I do something, back it up, mm-hmm. put it, take it into Scrivener and then put it into Google Drive. That way, in case anything happens, just also maybe a tip for listeners, if you don't have a backup to your backup, do that. Cause
I have three different backups.
Yeah, exactly. It's like three different drinks. One for hydration. Yeah.
Caffeination, hydration, inebriation, the three drink trifecta.
I think that's why I'm so afraid to use like those specific writing programs like Scrivener and whatnot, because it just the extra work of backing it up. I'm afraid that either I'm going to forget or I'm going to get too lazy and complacent. When I do like Microsoft Word or Google Docs, I have like automatic backups, and then I do like a manual one once in a while. But it happens so fast. Like, it's so seamless and so quick to do on my side that I kind of just like that simplicity.
It's nice with Scrivener because it's not cloud-based. It'll back up to my computer automatically. I've got like that set up, which is nice. You can like go into the files on the computer and like look at your different versions and stuff. But I still, because I'm like, you're not going to catch me losing. Yeah, no, not again. Not again.
No, yeah, it... No. With Living Writer, it doesn't automatically back up to your computer, but it backs up into the cloud. But you can save a like hard backup to your computer pretty easily. You just like export the novel. And the other cool thing about Living Writer is you actually can export as like any of the ebook files. So technically you could probably also do formatting with Living Writer, but I have not been brave enough to try. I am not that brave.
Stick
with what you know.
All right, well, Ash, I'm going to give you the chance to jump to our last question before we wrap things up here.
Well, I think we kind of touched on the very last question, so I think we're jumping around. Did you want me to answer the 14th one or ask the 14th one?
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. The long-term writing goals. Sure.
Yeah, so we kind of briefly talked to you have like the next project coming up, but let's talk 5-10 years. What are we? Are we wanting to make this career, or are we just doing this as like a fun enjoyment? What's the future look like for?
What's my 10-year plan? My long-term goal is I want to be a full-time author. Currently, it's just To the Gallows. My next hope is to get my high fantasy trilogy out there, and then maybe in the midst of that, do some standalones, work on an epic series. That's like a Throne of Glass style-ish kind of series. And also I have like contemporary novels I've been working on, and like YA paranormal stuff, and kind of just really branching out into different genres. And I plan to just kind of hopefully make it my full-time career, and I don't plan on having multiple different pen names or anything, just kind of having it under me and saying, hi, this is me, this is all my stuff, hope you enjoy my random bobbles and bits. And somehow make money off that.
Well, it sounds like you're off to a good start.
Yeah, seriously.
Hopefully, but being able to be a full-time author and like be able to be like a per diem, like as needed nurse, or maybe part-time, being able to just like do what I want to do when I want to do it, being able to work for myself as an author, but also still be able to help people and do the career that I love and feel that I'm like pretty good at. So we'll see how things go, but that's the plan.
Love it.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you have plenty of projects in the works, so plenty for people to look forward to from you. We're going to take the next few minutes just to open the floor to guests if they have any questions or comments they want to share with us. But also, this is your opportunity. If there's anything that you want to share that we didn't get to, now would be the perfect time. But
lots of all of the really important big things. I feel like we covered a lot of ground in the last like hour and a half.
I think Ash and I have gotten pretty efficient. I like to think
I
that.
I agree.
I think we covered lots of ground, but things that to share, I guess. If anyone is looking for a community to write with, I run the Second Cup Writers Cafe. It's a free Discord server available to anyone at any stage in the process, any genre, to come in, find like-minded individuals who are also writing books and work on their novel and have some accountability partners. I've had a lot of great friends who have come out of it, and I love running that as a resource. I definitely would not have published my book without it at all. So I guess a little plug for that. Hopefully it's going to get more active here now that I'm not in the midst of writing this little bad boy here. And I think that, I don't know. Any questions? I'll take any questions from either of you.
Well, I think we touched on most of the questions I had, but Ash, did you have any final thoughts or questions?
Do you have, I don't think we got to this, do you have a favorite author that you read like over and over again? I know we talked on, like touched on book or movies. Wow. Okay. End of the day for me. But give us like your writing inspo.
My writing inspo. Authors that I can read books of again and again and again. I specifically have one trilogy that I go back to always. The Uglies series by Scott Westerfield. I don't know if you read those, but I can go back and read those books all the time. Something about them just like gives me motivation to write. I think another one that's been added to that list is Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross.
Oh, so good.
Oh my God. I read that and I was like, I just want to write like this. Devastated. I was like, I just want to write like this. Like, can I just be her? I would say Divine Rivals is on that list, since she's definitely a big inspiration. And then after I published this book, I finally read my first cozy fantasy. I read Emily Wilde's Encyclopedia of Fairies.
So good.
I loved it. And I was like, I think reading this book for the first time is what people feel like reading this, my book for the first time. Like if I had to think of any book that I feel like had similar vibes, and like, I hope I evoke that same feeling. Cause like I cried, I laughed, I loved that book. So that's definitely another going back to read over and over again. I think those are going to go into the rotation of things. I'm actually not much of a rereader, but the ones I do, boy, howdy. Yeah, get some use.
Looks like Nicole is also a big Emily Wilde fan.
Yes. You have great taste.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's such a good, I got that for Christmas last year. Not 2024, but 2023. And I ended up like telling everybody about it. I was like, you should read this. You should read this immediately. It's so good.
Nah. Right now, actually. I want to see your live reaction.
Yeah, right. Awesome.
All right. Well, I think that's it. That's gonna do it. But thanks so much for joining us, Elizabeth. I know you've been trying to get on for a while, so it's been awesome to have you. Thanks for talking about your books. I'm super excited to see what else you deliver in the future. Anything you guys want to say, closing thoughts to the audience? Thank you guys as always for joining us and listening. Anything you guys want to share before we sign off?
Thank you for having me, and I can't wait to read both of your debut books. I'm so excited.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Might be a while for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, but just keep an eye out. It'll eventually happen.
Keep an eye out for it. I'm watching.
No, always a pleasure, Elizabeth, and thanks again for taking the time to let us interview you.
Absolutely. Anytime. I'll talk to y'all later. Have a great night.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye, guys. See you later.
Bye.